The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 326. I'm Brandon Schultz, member of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me for a special single topic episode, he's coming in from the road, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Hey, Brandon, is this Festivus season? Like, I've been confused. I thought that was around Christmas.
Festivus is generally when you have the airing of the grievances.
Right. And so I guess it must be Festivus season because it's official. Russell Wilson is airing his grievances. And I thought it would probably be good for us to chat for a quick minute here. I don't know. Are you planning just this for the little flockers? Are you going to put it off for everybody?
I haven't decided yet. This was just spur of the moment type thing.
Yeah. I think it should be for everybody.
Okay.
Yeah. I think this is a big deal.
It is a big deal. And this way we don't have to repeat ourselves when it comes to doing the next show that we do.
Correct.
Okay. Yes. Well, you say that it's an airing of the grievances, but from what I've seen today, this is not Russell Wilson airing grievances. We're talking about the Athletic story that came out Thursday morning. And it talked about, I guess the biggest news peg from the Athletic story is that we finally gain insight into where this may have turned for the 2020 season, because, you know, we saw Russell Wilson do Russell Wilson things for the first half of the season. Then it kind of got to the middle where you had the Buffalo game with all the turnovers. They lost to the Rams, more turnovers. And then the point that sticks out in this article is that Russell Wilson came to Seahawks management wanting to, you know, offer some ideas of how to turn things around. Apparently, he wasn't happy with whatever he heard. There wasn't a lot of detail there. But the thing was, is that he, quote unquote, stormed out of the meeting.
Yeah, so that's a bit of what was in the story, no doubt. But I want to go back to what you said right at the beginning of that, where you said, this isn't Russell Wilson airing out the grievances. This is an Athletic report. And I disagree with you. And here's the reason why. When Russ goes on Dan Patrick and basically just says, yeah, I'd like some more offensive linemen, and then the whole national media, who doesn't have a lot of connection in Seattle, start running their mouths and extrapolating off of stupid quotes and things like that, or blowing quotes out of proportion, that's one thing. But you have Michael Sean Duggar here, who came out with this story, and I think we can both agree, out of all the nerdy writers, he's the coolest of the nerdy writers of the beat reporters, right?
Yes.
Okay. And as such, he seems to have a relationship with all of the players. And I am sure, I feel this in my bones, I'm sure, that Russell Wilson's camp, his team, his people, however you want to say it, or Russ himself, said, hey, I want you to put out our side of the story here. And here are some things that I want you to talk about. And sure, you can actually use Jake Heaps' name when talking about me fuming during the Super Bowl. And you can have multiple players be cited unnamed throughout it. I don't want to say it myself personally, but I'm going to put this message out through you. And I think because it comes from a beat reporter, somebody who does have ties with the players themselves, I think this is a serious story. And I think the long form of it and the way that it was written, a lot more detailed, and not that all of it's true, but it's better than, say, even Wickersham coming in from way outside and doing his story a while back. And even parts of that proved to be true.
Okay, that's a good place to start with this, because I do see some reaction of people saying, oh, just another one of these, you know, hit piece type jobs. And no, I think
it's a hatchet job. It's a hatchet job. Don't get it wrong. Don't get it crooked, because it is.
Okay. Well, I'd be interested to hearing which parts you think they are, because I do think, though, that more weight should be given to this because it is a Seahawks beat reporter.
Yeah. And we've talked to Michael Shawn. Is he full of
catfish?
No.
He's a pretty good dude. So I don't think he would just make all this up for clicks. That's not who he is as a person. And also, too, they found a friendly person to do that with, because he is also on #, Let Russ Cook.
But it's interesting to me, though, that you actually think this is coming from Russell Wilson's side of the story, because to me, when I read this article, I feel like Russell comes out looking worse after this article.
Oh, without question.
So why would they push that? Why would Russell Wilson's camp push this article?
Ego, ego, ego. This is all about Russ's ego. He's butthurt because when he brought in some suggestions for a meeting, they weren't taken. He's butthurt because they decided to go from the first team in the league in passing on early downs throughout the beginning of the game to a whopping seventh in the second half of the year. His ego is bruised because he sucked balls the second half of the year and is having a hard time taking the heat. One of the quotes that came out of that story that I thought actually kind of pointed to this was, he's doing this to help rehab his image because he's taking some heat. That's not the exact quote, but the exact quote here
says he's finally catching heat. That's the main reason for all this. People are talking and holding him accountable because he's one of the highest paid quarterbacks. He says he wants to be the greatest, so now people are holding him to that standard. It's a PR game. He's trying to protect himself.
Absolutely. And we all wondered when he kind of took this turn in his life, which it's his life. He can do whatever the hell he wants. And I support it 100%. Is he going to be more of a celebrity quarterback, or does he care about winning? Well, we got our proof. He cares more about being a celebrity quarterback. He'd rather be the man in an offense than have wins. When you see in that very article, they list the statistic that since Russell Wilson's been in the league, only Belichick and Brady have won more games than Pete and Russ. And yet Pete's the problem, and that this is an untenable situation. He doesn't give his legacy isn't about winning anymore. It's about being perceived personally as being the best. His ego is out of control. And I will say this too, Brandon, that when I look back on my life and most of my friends in people that I've known over the years, right, and look at kind of how their life progressed and how their ego has changed over their lives, I can say with confidence that most men, their egos are at the top in their early 30s. Because you've been done being a child. You've been out on your own for a little, you know, 10, 12, 13 years, right? And especially if you're somebody like Russell, who's had a lot of success, you think you've got the world on freaking lockdown. And you think you know all the answers to every test. You really do. He hasn't had the world punch him back in the mouth again yet. It's been a while since his father passed away. That was the last time he got punched in the mouth by the world. And he is feeling himself right now. There is no doubt about it.
But all of these things that you're saying, these are all things that you're extrapolating, not from this article in particular, but this article based and the things that we've heard from the interviews leading up to this point.
I discounted the interviews more than I value this. This seems to be, Russ doesn't do anything without a plan. Like, this article isn't coming out without his cooperation.
Really?
There's no doubt.
Because all of the things that you're saying, I think point back to him as something that makes him look bad. So I don't know why Russell or anybody associated with Russell would necessarily push toward this narrative. Because, again, it isn't him demanding a trade. You know, some of the news points, I mentioned the quote. The other kind of news point was that meeting. The other thing that I pulled from it. It's that Wilson's frustration has escalated to a point that his camp has broached potential trade destinations with the Seahawks. And that was another thing that came out today was we actually did get four teams attributed to Russell Wilson's agent, Mark Rogers. And the four teams were the Saints, the Raiders, the Cowboys, and the Bears, which some of those are interesting teams that were named there.
Sure. And let's come back to the teams themselves here in just a second. But you asked, like, why would Russell's team put this story out there? Because it makes them look bad. They're that tone deaf right now. I think they genuinely thought that when this article goes out, that it was going to paint Pete as being stubborn, as the Seahawks not including him. Give his side of the story as to why he's built up this frustration and where it's now coming from, to the point to where I'm not demanding a trade. But if I were, here are the teams that I would like to go to: the Saints, the Bears, the Raiders, or the Cowboys, right? And again, if you want more proof about whether or not he would rather win or be a celebrity quarterback, those teams really paint the picture, because there's only one that is an upgrade in situation for him and would get him what he wants to be the focal point of an offense, and that's the Saints.
And that's the team that's $70 million over the salary cap right now.
Right. And I don't know what their trade assets look like, but they're probably not going to be the best either. So the point being is that's highly unlikely. It ain't happening. He's not going to the Saints. So he could either go to, according to him, the Bears. So a team with a great defense and relies more on running the ball and short, quick passing. Right.
Uh-huh.
Or he could go to the Raiders and play for John Gruden, who has made every quarterback that he's ever been around the most miserable person on the planet. Okay, so he could go there. That sounds like
an old school coach.
Yeah, or the Cowboys. And the only thing that'd be an upgrade for him there is he would now be the quarterback of, quote, America's team, but otherwise is joining an organization that can't even win the NFC least.
Okay, so that's the interesting part about those names. Those are the four names that were attributed to Mark Rogers. They came out through Adam Schefter. And the four teams that we heard earlier from Jason LaCanfora, the same two names were there with the Saints and Raiders, but the other two were the Dolphins and the Jets. And when I think of teams that at least have, at least with the Jets, well, it's New York for one, but I think they do have the beginning of an offensive line. And to me, the Miami Dolphins are the team that makes the most sense in terms of a team being a quarterback away from being able to compete for a Super Bowl.
But his problem is offensive line, and the Dolphins' offensive line is nothing to write home about. And the Bears, if he goes there, I thought he just got rid of a Fetty. Smart thinking there. Or the dumpster fire that is the New York Jets. Like, what makes you think that organization's ever going to figure it out? I mean, especially at the age of 32, it's not like he's got 10 years to have a 5-year rebuild here.
Yeah.
Under Rah-Rah Sala. This is so short-sighted. And not only that, what in the world makes Russ think he has any sort of leverage here?
Oh, yeah, he has none. The only leverage he has is to be able to give a list of names of teams who he would actually be okay with playing for. And that's why when I saw those four teams, I was like, okay, well, this isn't happening.
Right. And so the argument would be, well, the leverage is he could pull a Deshaun and say that he's going to sit out. Okay. But you got years left on your contract. Not one, years, multiple. Okay. You sit out and give up $30 million for the year. Give me a freaking break. And not only that, but the short-sightedness of him sitting at the Super Bowl and seething about Tom Brady being able to pick his team and then win the Super Bowl. What did the Bucs do well? Why did he pick that team? They had a damn solid defense and a solid offensive line, and they had running backs. They had all the pieces around him.
Yeah, they were a quarterback away.
And he watched even the great Mahomes suffer without an offensive line, right? So his take from that should have been, oh, just needing a good offensive line should be what I'm after here, instead of trying to go where the grass is greener. You know why the grass is greener on the other side of the fence, Brandon? Is that it's fertilized with catfish. Like, that's exactly why. I don't understand what he thinks his upgrade would be here and how this would help his legacy, especially in Seattle. Are you kidding me?
The things that I see that are still true, Russell Wilson, he wants offensive line help. He has said he does not want to leave Seattle. He has not demanded a trade. So I don't see this being a push for power necessarily on his side, because one of the things the article points out is that the Seahawks hired Shane Waldron with Russ's endorsement. So,
and that was cool for a second until he went to the Super Bowl. And then it wasn't cool. If this wasn't a power play, it would be very easy for him to come out and just be like, no, I trust Pete and John. We've had good talks. I think we're going to get the ship righted here, and we're going to win a Super Bowl in the very near future. I can't wait to get to work. Instead, when this article comes out, he puts out a video, a workout video that just says all fuel at the top. And guess what he's not wearing in any of that video? Not one thing Seahawks related.
I don't think that that's unusual.
Dude, if you're going to try to squash this, that's not what you do.
Who does it benefit by trying to squash this on any end? Maybe Russ. I don't think it benefits the Seahawks because they're always open to hearing what teams are, you know, calling and willing to offer in any kind of conversation. It's not like they just have to discuss Russ. If there's a GM calling and asking about Russ, John Schneider might say, hey, who else do we want to talk about as part of this conversation?
Possibly, but also, how does this not help the Seahawks by not squashing it? Like, think about it in these terms. They've got to renegotiate a contract with Jamal Adams. So you sit there trying to negotiate your contract with Jamal Adams. One of the big selling points is we're here to win, buddy. And we've got a future Hall of Fame quarterback on the roster. You get to be here with Russ for the next 4 years or however long his new deal would be. If you can't give him that guarantee, now you're basically asking him, hey, let's be part of another rebuild. And he's made it clear from the jump. He has no interest in that. And you gave up all those draft assets for him. This does hurt the team. This is not protecting the team or even opening up more options for the team. This is so selfish.
I don't think Adams' contract would be necessarily up for discussion until after the draft anyway. I think now is for the guys who are going to be the free agents, the guys who may need to be restructured. So, and there, I suppose your point could be made well there too.
You're fooling yourself if you don't think that the agents and the GMs aren't talking about contracts already.
Oh, sure they are. I just don't think that the Adams contract would be to the point of signing on the dotted line until after May.
Oh, I agree with you, but it certainly doesn't help. You know, having this extra drama.
Yeah.
And not only that, but what's so weirdly short-sighted about this to me is that I think everybody agrees on what needs to be done here. Like, all it is Russ feels like he should have more of a say in how it's done. Like, that's basically it. Look at Tom Brady at all the times he went to a Super Bowl. He almost always had a pretty damn good defense and a solid offensive line. And that's exactly what Pete Carroll wants. He wants a pretty damn good defense and a solid offensive line to control the line of scrimmage so that when they do go in those two safety high looks, they can run the ball down somebody's throat so that they can get back to throwing the football. One of the things in the article was that Russ was upset that Pete took the reins away from him. Pete didn't take the reins away from him. The league took the reins away from him. They said, fine. We've seen 8 weeks of this. We thought you'd go back to playing Seahawks ball. You're not going to do that. You're just going to keep throwing bombs. Fine. We're not going to let you throw bombs. If Russ really wanted to be able to get them out of those looks so he could throw more, then take a check down like 30 seconds earlier every time you drop back to pass.
Well, and that's what I've seen people pointing to is that they went from passing heavy on neutral, you know, script situations at 62% of the time for the first half of the season, and that declined to 59% in the second half of the season. So it's not like that part of the game changed. It was the success that the team had. But I stats like that don't necessarily matter. It's Russell's perception that matters, because if he believes that Pete Carroll took the reins from him in the second half of the season, then this isn't something that necessarily is going to get fixed. I don't think he's going to change his mind about how he perceived the situation in the second half of the season. It's going to take coming back and then winning.
And the other thing here, too, is, you know, Russ is pissed that they changed the offense after he committed 7 turnovers in 2 games. You don't think Pete Carroll's going to, you know, you don't think he's going to freak out when you turn the ball over 7 times in 2 games?
He freaked out just by the Buffalo game alone.
Right. And so, and he acts all like he didn't do anything to deserve it, that everything was going along lickety freaking split. And the other thing glossed over in the article when they're trying to paint this rosy picture of how Russ could have just turned this season around if they would have just let him, is that when they did change the offense, when they went up against tougher defensive lines and things of that nature to a hair more run centric, did they win more games than they lost?
No, it was the same.
Right. They won games. So if you're mad about not winning enough, I just don't get this.
And so if it was Russell's people pushing for this story from The Athletic, then credit to The Athletic guys for going out and getting people who would provide that other side of the story, because there was an anonymous coach in the article that said that whole let Russ cook thing. He is better when they can run the ball and they play off that. There is no question. No one likes that because they want him to be Dan Marino. Well, he is not Dan Marino. You are who you are, but he looks bad right now. And this was talking about like during the Giants game and that stretch of the season.
Oh, yeah. And he's 100% right. How many times did we get on the pod over the last half of this season and be like, what's going on with Russ? Something's not right here. And I think that had a lot to do with Shoddy's inability to adjust his game plans, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is Russ takes zero responsibility in all of this, too. That's the other thing that's alarming. This isn't the same humble guy who came into the league as a third-round pick who had gone through some crap early in his life and was told he was too short. This is a guy who views himself as, and rightfully so, one of the top quarterbacks in the league, but he's so concerned about that that he's not seeing the forest from the trees here.
The most damning part of the story was the storming out of the meeting. And that's probably the part that I have the biggest problem with, because it seems more like office gossip than it does. Like, because I know you can go to different sources and say, okay, we got 3 different people who are saying that he quote unquote stormed out of the meeting. And I have a hard time, because we all have a picture in our mind what that looks like. I have a hard time picturing Mr. Neutral Mindset himself, like slamming a door and, you know, or throwing stuff down on the table, or, you know, what does this actually look like? And what got people most intrigued by the entire story?
Oh, see, that wasn't it at all for me. I looked at this more from a 10,000 foot view rather than right down in the little nitty gritties of all the little things said. The 10,000 foot view was, look at everything that happened. Russ has tried so hard to get them to change and they're not changing for him. And so he doesn't want out, but he kind of wants out. And as far as him storming out in the detail of, you know, that little detail in the story, like, I don't find it impossible to believe that Russell has emotions and got angry on one day in one meeting and walked out of a room in a very competitive atmosphere.
Yeah.
Like I can see that happening. I don't think that's an insurmountable thing. I mean, geez Louise, if you don't have that in your locker room from time to time, you're probably not trying to compete. So that doesn't even bother me so much.
No, it's not necessarily that it bothers me. It's just, I picture Russell as the guy that, you know, walks out of the room and then it's like one of those heavy doors that closes really hard. And then he stops and goes, oh man, did they just think that I slammed the door? Or should I go back in there and let him know that I didn't slam the door, or and just say that it was a heavy door? What should I do here? And then just, you know, he walks off.
Yeah, I don't really care. I don't think it really matters much one way or the other, like that detail of the story. This is basically the pound sign let Russ cook people in his camp team people. Boy, Michael Sean did hit all those, right?
Oh, yeah.
However it is they want to call it. It's less that. And they're inventing a new pound sign now that we should all embrace is pound sign. Listen to Russ.
Catfish.
Because that's what this is.
Really, as I went through the whole story, I didn't see anything that I would categorize as anything that we haven't heard already. It was just that it was really a recap of the season with, and even going back to previous seasons, of some of the different data points in the story. So that's, in that way, I thought it was really well written in that it provided you with all the information in a nice timeline that kind of fit within this story. And so that's why I thought it was presented well.
Oh, it was presented well, for sure. But like I said, from Russ's point of view, I think it was tone deaf. And on top of that, like, okay, let's look at Pete's blame in this, right? In the debate of, well, geez, should we keep rolling with Russ and get rid of Pete or keep Pete and get rid of Russ? Well, I think it's been proven time and again in Pete's career as a head coach that he operates much better with younger guys, guys that will listen and toe the line, right? Where he struggled in his career, look at his stint with the Patriots. It was with all those veteran dudes. And then you saw Earl get to the veteran stages of his career and become disgruntled. And you know, Sherman get to the later stages of his career and become disgruntled. And now you have Russ hitting that period of his career and apparently being disgruntled. I don't know that Pete's great at dealing with veteran players in that way. And, you know, if that's the case and we're moving forward, I think it's time to ask the question, okay, do we roll with Pete or Russ? Well, if Russ isn't all in, then he's all out. Like, that's pretty clear to me. And the Seahawks have already extended Pete for, you know, who knows how long it was, 5 years, something along those lines. So with that said, if him and Russ aren't going to be able to coexist, you've already got the money tied up into Pete. I don't know. Maybe you start listening to 3 first round picks and a third, and you better
catfish.
Be in love with whatever QB in the draft is not named Trevor. You know,
I just, a trade isn't happening. It is Pete Carroll signed through the 2025 season. So yeah, that is a long-term deal. So the team has obviously made its decision on where they're going to go. No, I think that, I don't even think it's worth speculating on potential trade possibilities. These guys have to work it out. And maybe with all of this off-season drama at this point, this is what spurs these two to sit down and really have a deep philosophical discussion once April and May rolls around and you get these guys into mini camps.
Oh, without question. And I think the other thing that isn't talked about enough is, all right, fine, they trade them. And you got $13 million dead cap hit over the next 3 years on your cap. That's untenable. You can't do that. I mean, this isn't Jared Goff. Like you can't do that. So yeah, they need to sit down and have a real heart to heart. And Russ needs to stop acting like a freaking child about this. He, you know, if he wants to have control of a team, buy one. And he's talked about that's something that he's wanted to do. Well, guess what? You don't own it yet, bud. And you're not the head coach. And you're not the GM. Sure, you might be the most important player on the roster because of your position, but that doesn't make your job title above the others. You know, it's just the way it is. And you signed the contract.
Well, we've seen these power struggles play out probably more so than Green Bay than anywhere else in recent years with Aaron Rodgers and Nick LaFleur. And they've done all right.
Yeah, I mean, you can get there, right? But yeah, we talked about it, 2-3 podcasts ago about the 3 stages of the quarterback's career, right? The early part of the career where they're not making much money and they got a lot of help around them and they're real team guys to switching to, I want this whole team to revolve around me. And yeah, let's make sure we're spending all our assets on that to where you get to the latter stages of your career and you go, oh, geez, if I sacrifice a little bit here, not necessarily in salary, but in power struggle type crap in trying to play a style of football that wins week in and week out, then I have more of a chance to win a Super Bowl year in and year out. You know, another thing not discussed, and I've heard people talk about oh, you can't win with a quarterback who takes up X amount of money on your cap. All right, fine. Let's take a look at this last year, 2020. Russell Wilson's cap hit number was $31 million. You know what Tom Brady's was in 2020? $28 million. You're telling me a $3 million difference in that discount Brady took was the difference in them having all the pieces necessary to win a Super Bowl? I think not. It's definitely possible.
Yeah, I don't know what the exact percentages were, but I noticed that on field goals today.
That's the money. I don't know what the percentage is, but that's the money according to SpotTrack. I looked it up today.
Well, I did notice, though, that if you were to restructure Russell Wilson's contract, there was an article up at fieldgoals.com on this, and that got Russell's 2021 percentage down to 12.2% of the Seahawks cap. So there you go. You just restructure them, and you're in the golden window for quarterbacks.
Sure. Yeah, the window's wide open, you know. And not only that, but I don't think Russ has realized how good he's had it throughout his entire career. He walked into the league and started winning instantly. Ask Deshaun Watson about being on a dysfunctional franchise, not a fully functional franchise.
If I had my wish, I would find a way to try and send Russell Wilson like through some kind of virtual reality simulation that allows him to go to any team really that he wants to pick. And just to let it all play out, because I can't imagine it being a whole lot different or better. He had a very wild season in terms of the first half of the season to the second half of the season. They still won 12 games. They won the division. And we're to this point as if it was the same kind of season that Deshaun Watson had, where they went 4-12 and should have the third pick overall in the draft. So it's this offseason's already very weird to me. And again, you go back to, you know, trying to decide between Russell Wilson or Pete Carroll. Why do people have such a hard time holding in their head that both things are true, that Russell Wilson is a great quarterback and Pete Carroll is a great head coach?
Yeah. You know, I don't understand why the Seahawks as an organization would want to catfish can a future Hall of Fame head coach and a future Hall of Fame quarterback who is in the prime of his career because they couldn't figure out how to get a center.
Right.
And to go back to what? Like, I know a lot of people, I mean, Bloomy, bless his heart, you know, he's been on the soapbox for a long time. I don't want to win 10, 11 games every year and be a first round playoff exit. I want to tank. Okay. I mean, you can do that, or you can have that future Hall of Fame quarterback, future Hall of Fame head coach, and actually have the opportunity to win a chip on any given year based on the injury luck of the entire league. Because that's more or less how this league pans out every year.
Yes, so I do think there's still a two-year window where these two figure it out. They try and get, you know, back to another Super Bowl, and that's what it's going to take. Because, yeah, if they have anything less, you know what? They're going to have to make it beyond losing to a division rival. I think that was probably the worst thing that happened at the end of the season. If they would have lost to a team outside the division, even in a first round exit, but the fact that it was the Rams, an in-division rival, I think that's what's probably causing more problems than anything.
To the Rams with a quarterback they couldn't wait to dump, who had a broken thumb in the game, right? To further your sliding doors analogy, right? Like, if things had gone differently, I wonder how much different this offseason would have been if the team had started out like it finished and finished how it started out with Russ having a big, big year towards the end of the year. I imagine this whole conversation is totally different.
And then that just goes to how, I guess, the schedule played out, right? Although, you know what, who knows what would have happened if those other teams adjust defensively. It's so tough to say.
It is tough to say, but I like your analogy. I actually watched a Star Trek Next Generation episode the other day, and it was one where Captain Picard gets shot and he dies and he goes to the afterlife, and Q, the omnipotent being, is there and he's God. And Picard's like, oh, I got all these regrets. And he's like, okay, I'll take you back to when you're at the academy and you can redo your life and play it safer so you don't get stabbed in the heart like you did way back in the day, and we'll see how it goes. And flash forward to the future, he's like a, you know, some science officer who can't even be trusted with a report and not the captain of the Enterprise, right?
Uh-huh.
Like, you don't know. You don't know how, if Russ goes to another team, like, how that's going to pan out. It could potentially be a lot worse. You end up on the Jets or the Texans or somewhere like that, you're going to have a really difficult finish to your career.
If the Seahawks are going to trade him to the Bears, because they got the 11th overall pick from the Bears for Rick Meyer. And so you can just say, okay, we're going to need whatever the difference is between Meyer back then and Russell Wilson now. That's like 15 first round draft picks.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. 15 of them. And then Pete would have all his young guys to play with.
There you go. So let's see it. The Bears. That makes the most sense to me based on history.
They're not going to trade him in conference, like if they were to at all. But your point is exactly right. They're not getting, he's not getting traded. And the funny part is too, is that, you know, the initial stories came out off of his interview, and then, you know, the reports come out, he is not getting traded, period. And then Russ, you know, gets in the ear of Michael Sean and tries to, you know, dump this in the Seahawks lap. And this back and forth is just, it's maddening, because it just doesn't need to be this way at all. And you know what? When I blame Russ for his ego, well, I mean, we need to blame Pete a little for his ego here as well. I mean, he has a hard time with taking the criticism about his style and all that. He gets so prickly in all those things. Now, being a much older man, he's a lot better at dealing with it, but it's still there. As a highly successful human, he's got a pretty good sized ego.
Yeah.
And right now, neither of them seem to be able to check it at the freaking door.
Yeah, that's what this offseason is going to hinge on. So I think that's a good place to end it. I do have to ask you, though, did you listen to the latest episode of the Seahawks Man-to-Man podcast with Michael Sean?
I did not.
Well, for some homework for the next show, listen to that, maybe on your drive back from Oregon, and then I will see, and we can process all the news that comes out since then, but listen to that, process the news, and we'll come back and we'll see. I just want to know if your mind changes at all, because I did listen to that, and so maybe that's where my mindset is a little bit different than yours coming out of that.
Well, I hope you're right, because my mindset is this. If they do end up, you know, parting the sheets here, I think this would be the biggest sports tragedy in terms of potential what ifs based on an ego split since Kobe and Shaq, who couldn't seem to figure it out.
And I think with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.